Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Wednesday, May 8th. I'm Stephen Overly. The pro-Palestinian protests taking place on college campuses and the response to them from universities and police are creating a political quagmire for Washington. But similar tensions have been playing out for months on TikTok. The popular video sharing app has long faced criticism for suspected ties to the Chinese government. But since the start of the war, U.S. officials have also accused the app of amplifying posts that are sympathetic to Hamas and damaging to Israel. That seems to have motivated some lawmakers to support a recent law that forces TikTok to separate from its parent company, Beijing-based ByteDance. On Tuesday, TikTok officially challenged that law in court. But data from the app tells a more complex story. My Politico colleague Mark Scott worked with Northeastern University researcher Laura Edelson to analyze some 350,000 TikTok posts about the war. Posts that appeared alongside hashtags like I Stand With Israel and Save Palestine. On the show today, Mark explains their findings and tells me what the analysis reveals about TikTok's response to a growing political crisis. Hey, Mark, welcome back to the Tech Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
So really interesting analysis that you all have done. Let's start with the top line. Did you find in analyzing these posts that the TikTok algorithm kind of put its thumb on the scale of one side of this conflict?
Yes and no, right? The data suggests that, but we do not know categorically because TikTok wouldn't answer any of my questions. So what we did initially was to try and figure out over a four-month period what was going on TikTok. TikTok is something we all kind of use in terms of dance crazes and stuff, but it's also become a pretty key political communication tool for a variety of people, particularly young people. When you turn on TikTok, at least at the beginning of the conflict, there was a lot of pro-Palestinian content. I'm not suggesting that's a good or bad. It just was a fact. And what we found over this four-month period, there was 20 times more pro-Palestinian content created than pro-Israeli based on the 50 hashtags that we analyzed. So overall, it's quantifiably true that there was just more organic content being produced by people, you know, who wanted to discuss that issue. That is a fact. The question then becomes, just because there was so much more pro-Palestinian content produced, is that eventually being fed into people's feeds, into what people see on their smartphones?
That is one of the issues, right? Is like the amplification. It's one thing to create the content. It's another thing for TikTok's algorithm to push it into people's feeds.
100%. So people think what they see on TikTok is everything, and it's not. It's like 1% of the content produced. And so when you're scrolling through your feeds, we have to realize that the content you're being seen is a decision being made by TikTok's automated content algorithms. They're called recommender systems in the business, which is basically trying to figure out how to maximize your attention so you stay on the platform for as long as possible. Some would say that is because for advertising reasons. TikTok says in the past it's because it wants to sort of create the best experience for its users, but the algorithms and the posts that you see are specifically tailored and targeted via these complex algorithms.
So you worked with a researcher from Northeastern University, Laura Edelson, to analyze some roughly 350,000 TikTok posts, right, from the U.S. How exactly did that work? Walk me through your methodology.
Yeah, so the initial point was to take 50 hashtags associated with the conflict. So that is everything from like, I stand with Palestine, I stand with Israel, more generic ones like Gaza, and to then label them, either they were primarily pro-Palestinian or primarily pro-Israeli, or things like Gaza being used by both sides and by apolitical actors like the news media. And then we sort of labeled them, first point. Then Laura and her computer science colleagues used those hashtags and then extracted data from, legally, I should say, from TikTok and its data access model to figure out, okay, this is the data, these are the hashtags, and we now have 350,000 posts. They then went through and analyzed both how much content there was linked to these hashtags, but more importantly, something called views per post. Now, forgive me, this gets a little bit wonky, but it's important. Views per post is the actual data that shows what people actually saw on TikTok, not the content produced, because we could produce as much content as we'd like, but if no one sees it, frankly, does it even exist? And that for me is crucial to this, because it's not just about the volume of content, but it's about what people actually saw when they were scrolling through TikTok.
Well, that's the thing about TikTok, for those maybe who don't use it so much, it's not like you have to search for this or click on these hashtags necessarily. TikTok will serve things up, and if you even linger on it, it'll start to push more of that content to you, that it's known for its algorithm that is almost militant in its ability to like identify curiosities and then start feeding you content about them. So you analyze posts in particular around three major events in the war. And the first period you looked at was right after the initial Hamas-led attack on Israel on October 7th. What was the tenor of posts at that time?
So the three periods we looked at were specifically that came out of the data. We weren't specifically looking for these three periods. We just took specific events in the conflict that were important. When the ceasefire began, or when the hostages were released, or when the ceasefire ended, when President Biden visited the Middle East. Those are the time periods we looked at. The data showed there were three distinct periods where the algorithms changed and the content people were seeing in their feeds changed very distinctly. So the first period between the beginning of the war, October 7th, to the end of October, although over that period there was a lot more pro-Palestinian content being produced, the TikTok algorithm skewed it so that people were seeing more of that content than pro-Israeli. And that's important. Both the volume was higher for pro-Palestinian, but crucially, in the beginning of the war, which is why I think some of the US lawmakers responded the way they did, there was just the algorithm showed more of this content than pro-Israeli.
And so you notice then a shift, right? The next series of posts, which came after Israel responded, after Israel invaded Gaza in late October. What did your analysis find in terms of that shift that happened?
Yeah, so it was really distinct. And I must give credit to Laura Edelson at Northeastern for this, because this is her work. And I'm just parroting what she told me and what we analyzed ourselves. But from about October 27th to December 15th, the algorithm shifted. We don't know why, but it just did. So you went from having an over-reliance, overseeing of pro-Palestinian content at the beginning of the war to a shift where after October 27th, more pro-Israeli content was being shown and displayed to TikTok users via their feeds. We can discuss why. Again, TikTok wouldn't answer my questions about why, but something shifts distinctly. So you went from almost no pro-Israeli content being shown into feeds to more Israeli content being shown than pro-Palestinian. That was linked to the hostage crisis. It was associated with the invasion of Gaza and some of the attacks on, say, the Gaza City main hospital. But no matter what happened, the algorithm changed and more pro-Israeli content was being shown.
The final period that you looked at was in late November, the release of the first Israeli hostages. What happened at that point?
Yeah, so then the TikTok algorithm changed again. We don't know why. Again, this is all very opaque. But from about mid-December, both sides' content, both pro-Israeli, pro-Palestinian, disappeared. The volume of content was still being produced, particularly on the pro-Palestinian side, but the so-called views per post, the actual views that they were collecting via being shown to people's feeds, just tanked. It just fell off like a cliff for both pro-Israeli, pro-Palestinian. Again, we don't know why. There was nothing in the data that showed why this should happen. The volume of content on both sides was still being produced. It's just the ability for those posts to be shown to people's feeds via the algorithm changed. And therefore, from mid-December, few posts were getting through to people's feeds.
Did you find in the posts that you analyzed any that sort of stood out to you, either pro-Israel or pro-Palestine, that either got a lot of views or sort of were indicative of some of these trends you saw?
There was one post in particular, which we actually didn't include in the story, mostly because it did massively violate the terms and conditions. The by far the most viewed post of all this time period was a glorification of Hamas in a way that should not have been on the platform. And the researcher flagged it and it was taken down by TikTok. And so what we're seeing is that as much as both TikTok and other platforms are reacting, responding to the crisis, a lot's still getting through, particularly, I should add, in languages that aren't English, because as much as there's efforts to corral the badness in English-speaking TikTok, which is what we looked at, if you go to Arabic language TikTok, it's a whole nother thing. So I think what we saw was a lot of glorification, and then awful stories from both sides about civilians being hurt and unfortunately killed. And that is just a reality. And that's what people were discussing on TikTok on both sides, the sort of the human misery that this ongoing conflict has caused for both sides.
It's interesting, you know, you saying that we don't know why kind of these shifts happen. I feel like there is this perception that there's someone in a room like tinkering with, you know, the different levers, right? And manipulating this vast social network. I mean, in your reporting or in your conversations with Laura, the researcher, were there any theories as to why these changes happened, whether it was company driven or just the content people were interested in?
Yeah, so we should be clear that TikTok isn't alone, right? The algorithms are used in X, formerly Twitter. They're used by Instagram. They're used by Facebook. We just chose TikTok because it's frankly a social media platform that, despite its popularity with young people and obviously what happened recently in Washington, it's not that well known. Why did it change? It's difficult to tell. That there's no correlation between the content being produced and what was, and the shifts on what people were being seen. My working thesis, and again, I wish TikTok would talk to us about this because I think it's very important, is I would argue that it's TikTok, the company, reacting in real time to a political crisis. Yes, TikTok's been around for a while and it's faced a lot of headwinds in Capitol Hill, but in terms of its use as a social media tool platform in a global crisis, this is kind of the first time we've seen it. And I would suggest this is TikTok seeing at the beginning of the crisis, you know, the algorithms tilting towards pro-Palestinian, them getting pushback, blowback from some US lawmakers and pro-Israeli campaigners, then shifting it to the other side, realizing, well, maybe that's not a good thing either. We want to be focusing on dance crazes and not glorifying Hamas. And then them putting their foot on the scale again to just like, okay, we're done here. We need to temper it down. That's my working thesis. That is based on the evidence that we can find in the data. TikTok wouldn't answer, so we don't know. But that is my working thesis, that they are reacting in real time to a political crisis where their platform for the good and for the bad has become such a crucial mechanism for communicating, for talking about this crisis. And they found themselves in a whirlwind of complexity, and they just were trying to figure out the best way they could to deal with this problem.
I know you did reach out to TikTok for this story. Did you get any sort of response from them about what you found? And did they give any explanation of their algorithm?
None whatsoever. They referred to a blog post, which we put in the story, in terms of them removing content, which did break their terms and conditions. And frankly, both Laura, the researcher, and I separately found a lot of content that was still up glorifying Hamas in ways that frankly wouldn't. We did flag it. But no, TikTok didn't answer the question specifically on the algorithm. And they are not alone. Meta, Alphabet with YouTube, they also are very reticent to speak about this because A, it's complex. As you say, it's not one person sitting in a room pushing buttons. This is a very complex system, frankly, many of whom no one really knows what's going on. But also it's proprietary. And it's also how they sell advertising, by keeping people on their platform. So there's a sort of commercial reason why it makes sense for them maybe not to speak, but also it's difficult to unpick. And as we found this conversation, it's very complex, right? But they just are not in a position really to talk about it because frankly, few in the companies really know what's going on.
Here in the US, you know, the recent passage of the law that forces TikTok to find a new owner or risk being banned is going to the courts. I wonder if these concerns about TikTok's handling of posts about the Israel-Gaza war could become a factor in that lawsuit and whether this app remains in the US.
My betting is yes. I think because of the legitimate political interest in what's going on in Gaza for the US, both lawmakers and the average public, how TikTok has responded to this is going to be crucial, particularly as at the beginning of the war, as we saw through the data, there was a shift both in the volume of pro-Palestinian content as well as the ability of that content to be seen by average TikTok users. I'm a lapsed business reporter who spent the last decade plus being a tech/political reporter, but I always come back to the adage of numbers don't lie and politicians do, right? The point of doing this, the work that we did, is to quantify the threat and to show that despite the rhetoric around TikTok being allegedly more pro-Palestinian, which it denies, the data shows that it's more complex than that. That at the beginning, for whatever reason, there was a shift towards pro-Palestinian content. Then it shifted to pro-Israeli. And then there was a shift again to cut out all the content. And I think when lawmakers are making laws or courts are looking at these issues, they should focus on the data and leave aside the rhetoric. Because what we found was a complex, difficult situation that frankly isn't TikTok's fault. It's just they are dealing with it in ways that no one really understands. How they responded was clumsy, right? But I don't think Meta or Alphabet would do anything differently. It just happens that TikTok has associations linked via its parent company to Beijing, where Meta and Alphabet obviously are American. That is a significant difference that we should always keep in mind.
Right. It's like a TikTok, welcome to the political content wars. The other social media platforms have been here a while. Well, Mark, thanks for joining us on Politico Tech.
Thanks for having me.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. See you back here tomorrow.